was it Sci-Fi Happy Hour?
Sci-Fi Happy Hour.
Thanks for joining us today for episode 2 of the Sci-Fi Happy Hour, where the whiskeys serve neat, the labs where we meet, and our love of sci-fi just can't be beat. In the lab today, I'm Shoff. I'm here with Quinn.
Yep. Here
this
we
is
are.
Quinn over here.
Yeah, how we do.
Today's episode's going to include a review of Wonder Woman, just came out.
Yes.
And we're
going to
have
movie.
Awesome movie. And we're going to have a discussion about the wonderful women of sci-fi.
Yeah, everything women in sci-fi. That's a good topic, and it's relevant since we just saw Wonder Woman.
So let's kick this shiz off.
Yeah, let's
the
kick it off.
The only way.
That's what we do. We start the happy hour with our tasting of the whiskey that we're going to sample.
That's
and
right.
I think you have a recommendation for today's. Tell us about that.
Okay, so, you know, in honor of this episode, all right, featuring just powerful, independent, rock star women.
Yeah.
I reached out to a very good friend of mine to get her special request, what she thinks is probably the best whiskey to try. And, you know, I think that she, in her own right, is a Wonder Woman. And she is a whiskey enthusiast.
Love it.
So she had a special request, and she went ahead and she left me a voicemail, kind of letting me know what she thought was the best option. So I thought maybe we'd hear from her.
Yeah, let's hear it.
McKay here. So as you review Wonder Woman tonight, the whiskey suggestion I'm making for you tonight is Campfire by High West. It is a blend of rye, bourbon, and scotch, believe it or not. So when I think of this whiskey, I think it's every guy's dream girl in a glass. It starts off with a nice bite that gets your attention. In the middle, there's a nice golden flavor profile that enchants you. And at the end, it finishes with a smoky, peaty flavor that kind of warms the soul. So it's a glass that packs a punch, that kind of charms you, sticks in your mind and your heart, or at least it did me. If I were to rate it by my favorite Rebel Alliance character, which is a list I, of course, keep with me always, my first instinct was to go with Leia Organa, but that's such a huge distinction. I don't want to make that big jump for my first rating for whiskey in Star Wars. So I'm going to go with Jyn Erso. I'm probably saying her name wrong. I think she's really beautiful, has a cool story. And really would pair well also with being attributed to this whiskey. So I hope you agree and you enjoy. Have a good night, guys.
Right on. That
there
sounds
we
good.
Go.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. That's legit.
So today we're going to be trying some High West whiskey, specifically from the Campfire of their selection from their collection of whiskeys. Now, this is kind of a unique one because it is a combination. It's a hybrid. It's got a blend of straight rye whiskey, straight bourbon whiskey, and also blended malt scotch.
Yeah. And I remember when she said that they had the scotch in
it's
it.
It's crazy. So like, I mean, yeah, that's so unusual.
It sure is.
So I thought maybe we should pour some.
Let's pop
let's
it.
Let's do it. Okay, so first things first, if you're just joining us, this is your first Sci-Fi Happy Hour. You got to start with a little nose in the glass. We actually have our nosing glasses here, and we're going to go ahead and stick our schnozzes deep into the glass so we can get the aroma, understand what the nose tells us.
Well, that's what we do when we're kicking off the Sci-Fi Happy Hour. We pick a scotch, we pick a whiskey. And then we have some categories that we go through, just like any whiskey tasting. So you try the nose, try the mouthfeel.
That's right.
And then the finish.
Right. How it lingers in your mouth. Absolutely.
Right. So we're gonna give our recommendation. And what does your nose pick up, Shoff?
So I got my nose in there. You know what? Right away, I actually get a little bit of a fruity sense of things. It's a little bit subtle, not going to lie, but I do think that there is a certain amount of fruit forward flavors. I think it's a little bit citrusy. It's a little bit spicy at the same time.
Yeah.
How about you? What are you picking up?
I pick up a little bit of cinnamon. I don't know why.
Well, there's no wrong answer. I mean, everyone's nose is built just a little bit differently. I got a deviated septum, so God knows what I smell.
And it smells a little bit like chemically.
Okay. Professional.
Like melted plastic.
Okay, all right.
I mean, I'm sure I'm using the wrong term for that.
No.
But it's It smells plasticky.
Okay. Yeah.
And that's not unique. There are a lot of whiskeys that have that kind of smell. That.
What can you say about the color?
Maybe even a little sulfur.
I think the bottle's a little misleading because it looks a little bit darker, more caramely than it probably really is. I think it's probably more of a honey color to it.
It is lighter.
Yeah.
Well, I say we give it a taste.
Let's give it a shot. Sláinte.
That is very smooth, and I like the taste of it.
It is very smooth.
It has a good finish. It makes me feel kind of more of that fruity and that sweet. Now I'm tasting kind of a candy.
Yeah, isn't that weird?
And a sweetness to it, yeah.
There's something about this particular whiskey blend that it sort of doesn't even know what it is. Like, the identity changes while it's in your mouth. Like...
Yeah, that's a good description.
It's kind of weird. And I think, I mean, granted, that has a lot to do with all the different varying flavors coming into play.
Yeah.
It's finished off in Hungarian oak as well. So you're getting some toasted wine cask barrels. I mean, there's a lot happening here, that little nuances of flavor that are being picked up.
Yeah, it is good. I'm trying to just get more of that taste. I'm also having the sweetness is coming around on the finish. And... it has, I'm trying to think of one with the oak. There's a little bit of a honey type of flavor to it.
I actually think it gets more smoky and spicy in the finish.
Mm. Like, as it lingers. Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah.
And the fruity just comes out. I keep saying that. I'm trying to taste it in there. A little floral.
Now, if you're just joining us and you've never tried this before, press pause. Head on down to the liquor store and
stop what you're doing.
Get yourself some High West whiskey. I actually personally went and got this from Topps Liquor over in Tempe. Awesome place. It's nearby ASU. They have a huge, huge selection. Very knowledgeable employees. The guy helped me out. He says it's actually one of his favorites too. It's a 92 proof whiskey, and it's ranked 91 points according to Robert Parker.
Nice.
Who is a wine advocate. So.
Legit. And you said the distillery is in Utah.
Yeah, Park City, Utah.
I like it. This one's the High West Whiskey Campfire.
Campfire.
Yeah. I like it. It's got the rye, the bourbon, and the scotch. Interesting.
Yeah, and you know, for our options here, I would say we normally stick to single malt scotch, right? So this is a nice departure.
We are definitely fans of scotch, yes, yeah. But the bourbons are fun. I really like bourbons.
Now, interestingly enough, I was looking on the website for High West Distillery, and they were talking about some of the nose, taste, finish, and some of the things they were picking up were sandalwood, as far as the nose, leather, tobacco, toasted bread, chai tea.
Jeez.
Yeah, the taste, they were saying you should pick up some nutmeg, cinnamon, which you got. Job on that.
Wow, that's cool.
Orange zest, salty caramels. Didn't we say like candy caramel? Like,
yeah,
that's
perfect. Yeah. Tobacco, I definitely tasted the candy, yeah.
And they say the finish is long, sweet, spicy, and smoky. So, I mean, I think talk about us being like freaking whiskey professionals.
Yeah, you're really getting a whole potpourri of flavors in here, kind of the best of the different whiskeys, because you're getting the sweet. Mm-hmm. You're getting the more earth with the bark and the kind of the woodsy taste, and then you're getting the peaty and the smoky. So it's a very rounded, rounded bourbon. I'm really digging this.
There's a lot happening here. It's growing on me. Very cultural. It's interesting. The website talks about where they got their bourbon and rye from, but when it comes to the blended malt Scotch whiskey, they say it's an undisclosed source due to contractual reasons. They cannot share that. So it's kind of interesting that we don't know what blended scotch went into it, what distilleries might be involved.
But there is a clue. These folks.
Yes, that's true.
They were inspired by the Bruichladdich distillery.
Yes.
So maybe there's some anchor there in Scotland. Contracts there that they... something going on.
That would be pretty amazing.
And Bruichladdich is a very good...
Classic Lade.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love Bruichladdich.
They have such that iconic imagery as far as their bottles with the teal and the red and yellow. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah, I love the colors. The colors are definitely fun. Okay, so when we're going to rate this, we're going to follow our Star Wars motif.
That's right.
And every whiskey that we're going to be trying for you good people, we're going to... our rating system is going to be in the Star Wars universe.
That's
and
right.
When it comes to bourbons, Shaf, what kind of category do we fit bourbons
so
into?
Bourbons fit into specifically American whiskeys.
Anything American, okay.
Anything American is going to be considered Rebel Alliance characters.
Rebel Alliance, okay. So for Rebel Alliance, when I'm drinking this, I'm going to tell you initially, I didn't verbalize this,
okay.
But I wrote down my little notes here. When I first started sipping this High West Whiskey Campfire, legit thought of nighttime at a lake.
Okay.
That's what came into mind. Being at a lake nighttime and I was tasting that chemical cinnamon type thing.
Right.
So when it comes to a rebel character, I have to think of, because of the chemically type, I kept talking about that, I'm going to go with the medical droid 21B.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So this droid, if I'm not mistaken, was in Empire Strikes Back?
Yeah, it was the surgical droid that put together Luke.
Remember, oh, okay,
in
yeah.
That water chamber.
That's right.
And he's got that blue color, that toy blue aqua color, looks like the Bruichladdich bottle.
That's true.
That color, right?
That is true.
And so you have 21B, surgical medical droid. And when I think of this whiskey, it has everything coming together at once. And as I drink it, it's healing me, baby. It's healing me.
I like that.
That's
dude.
What I'm doing. All right, that's what I'm doing.
So, all right. So in keeping with that, all right, mine's different. Mine's from the same movie. So I'll give you that. Mine's also Empire. But when I was drinking this, sniffing it, you know, the whole shebang, I was getting a lot of smokiness. And it made me think of kind of like a cloudy sky.
Okay.
And
cloudy sky. So cloud, you're talking about Bespin.
I am. We're talking about the cloud city of Bespin. Now, specifically, the flavors for this particular whiskey change. And because of that, I'm thinking about characters in Cloud City that sort of have an allegiance change during the movie. And that, to me, comes to mind Lando Calrissian.
Ah.
All right, because he starts out, and I'm actually not talking about him going from bad to good, but actually from good to selling out his friends.
Oh, okay, that change where he has mercenary intentions.
Yeah.
He has his own city to look out for. And he made an agreement that's going to make it nice for them to run their operation free of any Empire control.
That's right.
So he had mercenary intentions, yeah.
So, but knowing that Lando does eventually become part of the Rebel Alliance and assists later on, I view him as a Rebel Alliance
okay,
character.
So that's how you got there. Gotcha.
But yes, but because it starts out sweet, it starts out florally and citrusy and also a little bit fruity, I think that symbolizes him being Han's friend and bringing him in very, very sweet. Like he's like, come on over, come park your Millennium Falcon on our landing platform. It's totally fine. We're best friends here. We go way back.
So what I'm hearing from you is Lando is sweet and fruity.
He's sweet and fruity. I don't know if Billy D. Williams would appreciate that. Sorry, Billy D. Sorry, Billy
hey,
D.
It's okay to have a crush on him. I'm good
with that. He's that scoundrel.
I don't like him.
But yeah, so then he turns bad, and I think that smokiness kind of picks up that darker side. So
legit.
So I think this is totally Lando.
I freaking love it. Yeah, that's cool. So we're talking about Wonder Woman, and what we're gonna do with that on when we come back.
Oh yeah, totally.
But I first have to tell you about going to the theater to watch Wonder Woman. I went and saw it in IMAX. So it's this crazy thing that happened. You're not going to believe this. Unbelievable.
Okay.
I'm standing in line at the concession stand to get my popcorn.
Okay.
And right alongside me, you know how you start advancing along the line?
Sure, yeah.
To get to the order counter? There's this man and his little boy. And I'm thinking the little boy's about 4 or 5.
Okay.
Really young. And the dude is one of those dudes that wears the tank top and has the shorts and the sandals. And he shuffles his feet along. He can't pick them up.
Yeah.
And he's got the big giant calves. You know what I'm talking about? Those big giant calves that look just unreal. Like whenever you see someone like that, don't you just stare at their calves?
Like his name's probably Tony.
Like it's just these big, they just look unreal. It's like just these huge calves. And he's this big man. And he's telling his boy he's going to get a soda because the little boy is asking for candy. He wants candy.
Right.
But the man's telling his little boy, no, you're going to get soda. And I'm trying not to listen, but he's talking. It's very audible.
How could you not? Yeah.
And so I'm looking forward. I'm just trying to concentrate on what popcorn I want. I can't decide if I want either the large or the medium. I think the big difference there is 50 cents or something.
Yeah. They always try don't to go breaking your budget.
Like,
yeah.
No, I want the medium. I don't want the large, okay? Would you like the large for the extra 50 cents? No, I want the medium.
The guy's like, look, I'll pay for your
and
large.
And I'm very specific about no butter on my popcorn. I don't want it. So I'm concentrating on these things. I got to have it the way I want it. But this audible voice is like, no, you're going to get a soda. And it's almost like this tone of like, shut up.
Yeah.
And so I'm advancing along the line with this man and his boy. And right when they get up, they catch up a little bit ahead of me. So now they're ordering and I still have two people in front of me.
Okay.
And he orders the biggest soda that is available on that counter. It is huge. And he hands it to the boy without the lid on it, just the soda. And this looks like a small trash can in this boy's hands. He's holding it at eye level. And the soda's at the very top. And the ice is burging just above it, poking it. And the little boy's looking at it, if you can imagine this.
I can see it.
And he's trying not to spill it. He's counterbalancing it. And you see it just coming over the edge. Mm-hmm. And the man's trying to order that boy, the lid with the straw. And wouldn't you know it? The little boy spills.
Oh my gosh.
He spills like a lot. It's like a pour almost. You hear it splashing on the ground. And the man has a meltdown. He goes, what are you doing? I told you not to say. And he's doing this in front of all of us. It's like he probably acts like this at home, but he doesn't know how to turn it off. And he's doing it right there at the concession stand. So I watch in slow motion as this man swings his arm and smacks the soda out of the hand of the boy. And it hits the boy, too.
What?
And I can't believe it. Right there.
That's insane.
And so I go, hey. And I'm about to, I'm getting this dude's attention. He turns to me. And I'm going to tell you what I told this man right when we get back from this break.
Oh,
we're going to talk about Wonder Woman.
Oh my gosh. All right. When we get back.
To go solo?
Yeah. Sometimes when you go solo, you gotta do things on your own.
Okay.
And the society kind of, they don't really like that.
Are you talking about like when you go archery practice or when you're shaving your legs? What's the...
Well, no. When I shave my legs, there's a lot of people present.
Yeah, well, of course. I know.
It takes an army.
It's a performance. I have an audience when I do it.
I mean, I can't get everywhere. I need help. Okay, and we're back.
We are back.
Now, I want to hear what you said to this guy, to this crazy guy. But first, you got to tell me. What's in that box over there?
Oh, with all these parts?
Yes, all the parts.
Okay. Well, remember we talked about building a robot?
Yes, last week. Yeah, we talked about
so
that.
So we're going to do that. So what I did is I started ordering some parts from Newegg. Plus, around here in the lab, we've got different parts from microwave ovens to refrigerators and
you've got a couple old, dead Keurigs in the corner.
Old generators from the Y2K days. And, yeah, so I've got different spare parts here in the lab.
That's awesome.
So we're going to put together a machine, a killing machine, a war machine, if you will.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm going to rely on you to come up with a name.
Okay.
No, maybe I won't.
Eh.
Maybe I'll roll the die.
I'm pretty clever.
Well, okay, give me two names just off the top of your head that maybe... I haven't built the robot yet, of course,
okay.
But this is going to be one that we're going to build so that it's... What happened?
No. Oh, yeah. I'm thinking. I'm just trying to think. Let's see. What could it be?
It could be Bingo.
Okay, Bingo's good.
Or Luke Cage.
I'm thinking maybe...
We'll come up with it later.
Yeah.
We'll figure it out.
Because right now, George is the only thing that's...
You came up with George?
Yeah.
Unless it came up with like G.E.O.R.
Or like Barack.
Barack. What we're going to do is we're going to make a robot. And it's going to be great. That's the name of the robot, Barack.
Former president of the United States.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, that's all I got. Michelle.
But why Barack for the robot? Just because you wanted to do the voice?
Here's a better question. Why not Barack?
Well, because the robot should stand for something. If it's going to be B-A-R-A-K, then stands for...
Oh, okay. All right, well, if we want to stand, maybe something...
Biomedical ambassador for rock and roll, or what's the... Why the Barack? Other than you just wanted a chance to do the Barack.
Well, I wanted to call him The Rock, but I felt like that was too...
Oh, El Rocco?
El Rocco!
So yeah, we're just putting together this robot, and we'll see where it goes. Maybe we can find some good use for it besides just a destructive machine like you saw at the Comic-Con.
True.
Right? And instead of that, maybe it has some utility. Like maybe it can open up beer bottles, or it can feed the cat. I don't have a cat.
We have to get a cat, and then it can feed the cat.
Maybe it can
pick out a cat for
fill
us.
Up, you know those little barrels that you usually can get at the different shows? Like the whiskey barrels?
Yeah, totally.
That are small tabletop size?
Oh, maybe one could fit inside of him?
Yes, it could fit inside the robot, and then it will bring it to us. Wouldn't that be cool?
Oh, it'd be like our own little brandy barrel. Like R2-D2 on the little scrim thing that's flying around by Sarlacc pit. Yeah, totally. Yeah,
our own robotic St. Bernard, if you will. You know, and it comes with the brandy barrel, and then it I'm just thinking.
I think it's brilliant.
I'm designing it, but there we've got a ways to go.
Yeah, I think it's a work in progress.
Well. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. All right, so we're going to talk about Wonder Woman.
Let's talk about Wonder Woman.
And we're going to talk about what led into Wonder Woman.
Okay.
Which was this crazy experience you had.
All right.
Getting your concessions, getting your popcorn, your medium-sized popcorn.
Medium, no butter.
By the way, I have to let you know. That popcorn, they pre-butter.
Oh, I know.
So you already got butter.
I know. Why would I want to add more butter? That's crazy.
Just making sure you
knew that.
That's
insanity.
Yeah.
It has plenty of butter.
Yeah.
You don't want to throw more on there. It ends up being a big can of butter douche on your popcorn. And so you're just going to douche it with butter. And that's just crazy to me. What person would do that? It's like the same person that would do that would also stand in line at the Cinnabon. For one of those hot cakes with jizz.
Blinded by the light. Yeah. Wrapped up like a butter douche. And motor in a nut, right?
It doesn't say douche.
That's not what they say?
No, people say that, but it doesn't say
douche. I was pretty sure it was butter douche. So, all right. Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
But what you got to tell me? You got to tell me what you said to him.
What happened to the dude? Okay, so I go, hey. And he turns around to me.
Uh-huh.
And this is now a confrontation, right? This is now an ordeal. It went from an ordeal.
Right.
To now a confrontation where there's going to be fisticuffs right there.
I'm predicting the cops.
Out of the peripherals of my vision, I could see people reaching for their phone. They're going to record this. This is going to be on YouTubes.
You're going to be a viral video.
Hey, he turns around, and I kid you not, there is spittle coming out of his mouth. This is a beast. And I'm not just talking about the huge calves. I'm saying this is a lowbrow mouth breather who smacks his own kid in public, and he ain't going to have no compunction about smashing his fist into my face. This dude has the brain of a walnut, the size of a walnut, okay? Hey, and he turns around, and I go, look, if you really want to hit that kid, I got a baseball bat out in my truck, and I'll bring it over right now. We can do this right. And then I turned and walked in.
Oh, my God. That was
now,
brilliant.
What I saw next, Wonder Woman, let's talk about that. What are your initial thoughts of that?
Okay, so I was pleasantly surprised. I loved it.
Okay, well, you thought it was going to be bad?
No. But I didn't have high hopes. Because we're kind of working off of a few not so amazing movies. I mean, we have Man of Steel, which I liked, but it wasn't great. Batman versus Superman, which I liked, but wasn't great. Suicide Squad, which I did not like. And now we have Wonder Woman. So it's kind of riding off of the coattails of some very mediocre movies.
Off the DCEU, is it?
Yes, DCEU, the
Expanded Universe.
Expanded Universe, yep. Right. So
Dark Comics.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm just saying, for some people don't know that.
You're
some
right.
People don't know DC. They think DC,
they think
know.
It's DC Comics, how people think. They're like, oh, DC Comics.
And what does it stand for?
Dark Comics Comics.
They do say DC Comics,
they
don't they?
They do all the time.
It's DC Comics, but it's Dark Comics.
Yeah, and I think probably most people don't know that.
I know. That's why I wanted to. Sorry. Go
ahead. You dropped some truth right now, yeah. Right onto the
just
podcast.
Just being helpful. Table. That's what I do. That's what I'm here to serve.
Gosh, you're so sweet.
And juicy.
Sweet and juicy.
No, really? What did you? Fruity. That's what Lando. You're talking about him being sweet and fruity. No, I dig it. That's okay.
Yeah, Lando can be how he wants to be.
It's own it.
Yeah, he does own it quite well. So Wonder Woman was awesome. There were a few things that I loved, a few things I didn't love. I'll start with a few things I didn't love. You okay over there?
Yeah. Just drinking my campfire.
Got a little medical droid in your throat. So the few things I didn't love is I didn't feel that the villain, and I think that every superhero movie is defined by its villain, not by its hero. If it has a really solid villain, then I think that the hero has something to truly overcome and triumph, and I think it makes it for a better struggle, a better conflict, and a better movie overall. This particular movie, there's a few villains, some minor, some one more major. I don't necessarily want to spoil everything, but I feel like I should...
Well, I mean, why not? This isn't a spoiler-free discussion. We're having the discussion. We're talking it.
You're going to let me do that?
Why not?
Sweet. Okay. All right. So Ares is a joke. He's a joke. He's the god of fucking war. And he's this scrawny mustachio dude who...
But that's just the form he takes. That's not him.
They established that's him. They show that flashback of him after he had been cast down. That was him. That's what he looked like. That is not, in my opinion, what Ares would look like.
When we talk about gods presenting themselves on this plane, on this dimension, this existence, they take different forms. They take the form of a bird. They take the form of a lizard. They take the form of a beautiful woman. So they can assume forms. They're ethereal.
I agree, but that's not the case with how they presented him this time. The way they
So Ares, the god of war, he is depicted in the movie as this feeble old man, and you believe that that is really Ares incarnate. Because I don't buy it.
You don't buy what?
I'm saying that's not Ares. That is Ares. I know that's Ares. I'm not saying it's
You think
not,
that's the form he
that's
took?
That's the form he took.
I wish that were the case, but the way they showed the flashback does not indicate as such. If it was he assumed this form of this person in Parliament or whatever, then that makes sense. But that's not the case. That same form that he had, that actor, whoever he played, I can't remember his name, that's how they showed him when he got cast out by Zeus. And why would he have a different form being cast out by Zeus? Okay. If he's next to Zeus, he doesn't need to change his form.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So then he absolutely, that's what in this movie, in this universe, that is what Ares looks like.
Okay, so let's say he's an old man and you don't like him being an old man. You want him to be a young stud or you want him to have power. Yet at will, he was able to conjure up molten armor and run around, not at all prohibited by age or diminishing power.
That's true.
So what difference does it make if he has... What color his hair is, or the wrinkles on his skin? What doesn't matter because he has the same power.
Yeah, but I think visually he was not impressive.
You don't like him being an old man?
No.
Okay.
No.
All right.
I also don't think that it was a necessary bait and switch. They didn't have to do a twist. Like, I don't know. After seeing it and after thinking about it for some time, I realized that. The villain of the movie really isn't Ares. The villain is war in general and the human predisposition to violence. And that is the true villain. The personification of war is Ares, so it makes sense that that would be the ultimate baddie for her to face. And she does need a villain to actually spar off against because she's so powerful. By the way, she's a little too powerful. The powers they establish for her are a little bit more so than what she has ever exhibited in the comics. Her ability to basically fly.
Yeah, fly. I was wrong.
I mean, I understand, and I read a little bit about this too. They decided to have her lineage be a daughter of like a demigod of Zeus, right? So she can actually harness electricity and lightning. Like, I felt like that was taking things a little bit too far. The way she dispatched Ares in the end just seemed kind of like, we got to figure out some way to end this fight. And then she just channeled all that electrical energy that he himself was wielding.
Yeah.
Like, if he can wield it, then he should be impervious to it just the same as she is. So it didn't really make a lot of sense, especially since Ares is also a descendant of Zeus at the same time. Like, if that's what qualifies her to be able to wield electricity, then he should be just as unaffected by it.
Well, how do you reconcile that logic with Iron Man? Iron Man is already powerful enough by his own right, but yet when he gets all of that electricity from Thor, and there is nothing before that indicating that suit, the Iron Man suit, has any kind of ability for capacity.
That's true.
Yet he gets all this power, and then what was it? The butler or what, that robot voice goes, power is at full. And he goes, interesting. And then he just rechannels it and redirects it back at Thor.
That's true.
How do you reconcile that? Where is your criticism?
I don't.
That's fair.
Yeah.
It's fair when Iron Man does it, but when Wonder Woman, who's born of a deity, when she does it, you have problems.
No. Don't try and bring...
Like... No, I'm clarifying it. I'm playing the advocate. Yeah. This is the flaw in your logic that I see, so I'm asking you.
Oh, I'm saying that I do think that was an overpowered, unexplained moment
for Wonder Woman.
For Iron Man.
Right, but for Wonder Woman, you don't like it.
I don't like it either way.
Oh, you don't like it that Iron Man has it either.
No.
Oh, okay. It sounded like you were okay with it.
No.
Oh.
No,
it's
yeah.
a cheat.
Exactly.
It's a cheat. Thor should have kicked his ass.
Absolutely.
Yet he's going toe-to-toe and even beating Thor.
I mean, and truly, if Thor just swung his hammer at that armor, the armor would be gone.
Yes.
He'd be,
that,
he'd
I
be
didn't like that
smashed
fight.
Smashed into a little like pulp. Yeah, absolutely.
That he could even last a minute with Thor, let alone he was winning that fight when Captain America showed up and slapped them both down, which was also bullshit. A super soldier,
right,
cannot beat up Iron Man or Thor.
Yeah, his abilities are definitely not explained enough to truly understand his own limits of where his powers lie.
Yeah.
I mean, that's truly the case. But things I really loved about Wonder Woman was I felt that she really... really brought it in her character development. She absolutely is. I think she's so charismatic. Gal Gadot was so good in the part. When I think about Batman versus Superman, she really was one of the best parts of that movie, and she had such a small aspect to it. But then in this movie, sometimes you wonder, okay, well, she did really good in a small role. Can she carry it? She carried it big time.
Yeah.
She was so impressive. I thought that her interactions and this naivete that she displayed as far as what she thinks about human and humankind and being a protector and not being corrupted in any way, shape, or form, it was so refreshing that I couldn't help but really root for her and want her to succeed because she's so pure. And that's such a cool thing to see, not somebody not affected by... all the crap that happens in the world, and just wanting to be an agent of change, positive change. Mm-hmm. The scene with her in No Man's Land, best scene in the entire movie. The way that music swells as she's climbing the ladder and starting to walk down that battlefield by herself, and which inspires the rest of the troops, and they finally make it to the next hurdle in the on the way to that town. Oh my gosh. That was so epic. And she's just like blocking machine gun fire. She's got her shield out. Ah, I loved it. I thought her and Chris Pine had great chemistry.
Yeah.
Even though his character, I wasn't really expecting much from, I thought he really brought it.
Yeah.
I never really thought
Chris was great at that role.
I never thought much of Steve Trevor, but as a character, but he was very interesting, and he was also very, powerful in the sense of his impact on her.
Yeah.
And I love that.
Yeah, so, definitely.
What are your thoughts on? Because you saw it too.
That movie, the storytelling was just outstanding. The way that they introduced the character, what motivates her, and then starting to reveal just from the stories she was reading about Ares, already were being introduced to the antagonist, and she's going to meet him at the end of the movie. And then you have this rising swell of the conflict, and that's when we see, as it's coming up and building up to the man she's going to take down, and when she does, you have instantly this dark moment.
Yeah.
And it's the dark night that the hero has to get through where she gets lost in the woods. And it's done masterfully. The story is top shelf in how the audience is told the plot through the character. Because when we see that she kills him and nothing changes, and she is bewildered.
Yes.
She is lost in the woods. It's the dark moment, because at that moment you see that contrast when Steve climbs up to her and says, "We gotta go now. We've gotta do this." And she's Tharn. She's stunned. She's not going anywhere. She leaves. He turns. He goes, "Well, I gotta go. I gotta go." And he goes off without her. She's the hero, and so the heroine. And so she's left there by herself trying to figure it out. And it's in that weak moment. We've seen this story before.
Yeah.
We've seen where the hero is left alone, and it's in that traumatic experience where they've lost their moorings and they don't know what's right and what's wrong that the devil comes.
Mm.
And Ares shows up and he goes, "They always do that." And he has this little soft intro, and she says, "Wait, what are you doing here?" And it's the same time the audience is figuring out, "Wait, what's he doing here? How did he get here? Who is he? What?" And then he slowly reveals himself.
Yeah.
And especially you start to see his power when she comes around to the doorway and he's not there anymore. He's outside. And then she shoves the God Killer into him, and he takes it and it just falls apart. And she's like, "The God Killer." And you just have this beautiful line where he's blowing the dust of that sword off his hand. He's like, "That wasn't the God Killer."
Yeah.
"You are." And now you start to see again, the tension starts to rise. She has a new enemy, the real enemy. Which I know, obviously, it isn't him. It's just men in general, the war, the corruption of people. But just a wonderful story. But for all its beauty, and I'm not going to discount that movie at all. That movie was excellent. Top shelf. The best movie so far for the year.
Really?
Yeah. That movie was just, the storytelling was so good. But one thing I can pick apart that I think, when I compare it to the TV show, is the TV show, and Wonder Woman, I think, in the comics too as well, is the real strength of Wonder Woman, the real independence and power of her, is that she was written in such a way that was unique from everything else going on at that time. Especially when you contrast it with television in the 70s, you had Charlie's Angels, and you had the Bionic Woman, and then you had Wonder Woman. These were all going on in that decade. And every one of those cast these beautiful women in scanty clothes, doing sexy shit and saving the day. But for example, the Charlie's Angels, they're sexy women doing what they want, kicking ass, but they use their sexuality to exploit and get things done in their favor.
Right.
So you see that little bit of compromise, if I may call it, right? For all its feminism and for all its strength and might in casting women, you can't domesticate this. You've got to think about it, what this was in the 70s.
Yeah.
And so there was still a bit of a compromise, if I may color it that way. And with the Bionic Woman, she even had a love interest. But in Prince and Diana Prince, and I'm talking about the 70s show, Wonder Woman, there was no love interest. Now you might say, what about Steve Trevor? And he was originally written as the love interest, but he married Etta Candy. His love interest was his secretary.
Mm.
They were perfect partners. They were equals. There was no chemistry between them. It was originally written so. But I think the rumor is that Linda Carter and the actor for Steve Trevor, they hated each other.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They hated each other. They couldn't stand each other. And so I think the writers just went, well, let's just make them perfect partners in that they operate together, they function together, and there's nothing else they want other than the shared common interest of doing good.
Which worked for the show. I mean,
it worked for the show. And you saw that in the movie as well, except that they did hook up.
A little bit,
and you couldn't help but do that because you have these two gorgeous people, Chris Pine and Gal Gadot. And if they didn't, Patty Jenkins would have caught hell because the audience wanted to see that.
Yeah. They even had that little gratuitous spa scene.
If they didn't sew that to us, there would have been all kinds of nasty. But the movie was done perfectly. I think Patty gave that to him. But I think the real strength of Wonder Woman is she never used her sexuality. In fact, more and more in the development of the Wonder Woman TV series, you actually saw season after season her donning that costume less and performing actions and saving the day as Diana Prince. So there was even a break from that. It's like, I don't need my powers. She would use, the show plot would deliberately put her in situations where she couldn't spin and become Wonder Woman. So she had to think as a strong female, not without those God powers.
Interesting.
Yeah. And so that's the only criticism I can say. Wonder Woman was great, awesome, fun, but it didn't. That hookup scene was a slight compromise, but I'm being very, very, very nitpicky.
Yeah.
I think it was a well done movie. I don't know if it could have been done any better.
Now the movie end. So there's no end credit scene in this movie.
You know, there was never an intro.
That's true.
There was never an intro where you saw this Wonder Woman and starring, directed by. You never saw that. It just went right in, and it never let up.
That's true. But without. With no end credit scene, which is typically the fanfare, which you can expect from a superhero movie, the ending of the last scene where she gets up on like the balcony of this building and she hears like a big boom and then she heads off, she jumps off into the fray.
Yeah.
Do you think that that is leading into Justice League? Do you think that she's fighting some battle that is relative to the beginning of the Justice League movie? Like she's sort of perpetuating that, or maybe this is her own sequel that she's moving into. Where do you think that's going?
Well, we know. No, wait, do we? I don't think there's a sequel for Wonder Woman.
Well,
not that there's
gonna
be one. I know there's gonna be one, but I'm saying the next time we see Wonder Woman will not be her sequel.
Right.
Right.
Right. So that, I mean, but yeah, the timeline we don't necessarily know either. So
okay. So my point is, I think it is something that when we get into Justice League, we're gonna see that.
That would be,
and she's
cool.
Just going to come flying in.
How cool that she works for Wayne Industries.
Yeah.
That was kind of interesting. She's like an artifact, I don't know, appraiser, curator of some kind. Yeah. That was very cool.
Well, I thought that was for her own personal collection. I didn't think she was a curator for Wayne Industries. I know she partnered with him, but you said she worked for him.
Oh, I just assumed that she did.
Oh, I thought that was her own personal collection.
I guess that's true.
I don't know. That was my impression, but now that you have me thinking about it, so I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. I dug it, though. I'm excited to see what happens next. I think they've really reinvigorated the DC universe.
And, oh, yeah.
I feel better about what we're going into for these next movies. It's really unfortunate what happened to Zack Snyder's family.
Yeah.
Because, you know, as much as people don't like him, it's a horrible thing that he had to experience. With Joss Whedon taking over the directorial duties, at least the movie's in good hands. That process, having an ensemble cast, Joss Whedon did it very well over the years.
Well, Joss Whedon was probably picked because he is well known for building stories and worlds with strong female characters. Mm-hmm. So obviously he was picked for that. Plus, he's no slouch. The man is a master.
Yeah. Extremely hard worker. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm excited. I'm really, really excited.
So we're going to get to talking about, you know, with Joss Whedon, different women in sci-fi, and just that whole, what kind of inspires that, really? Because you have women in sci-fi, but they're not there as side characters. They are main characters.
Mm-hmm.
And when we look at these comic books, they are archetypes of figures we've seen in history.
Absolutely right.
So let's get into that.
Let's do that.
When we get back.
Man,
was his speed matched?
He was driving a car. Here's the thing.
Yeah, it's not that hard.
But he was driving a car. He shouldn't even have, like, the torpedo should have been, like, past him within seconds. Like, he shouldn't have had the amount of time that he had to just, like, have Tyrese driving the car while he's, like, leaning out the side, and Tyrese is screaming because that's all he does throughout the movie is just scream, I can't believe this!
Well, torpedoes aren't that fast. They're not missiles.
Okay. All right. Well, how about this? All right.
No, did you know that? Torpedoes aren't fast.
They're faster than me.
They're slow relative to, like, a missile.
Okay. Well, I still think that it was unrealistic because here's the thing. He's using his hand. Don't you think that would be kind of hot? Like, torpedo just got fired out of a freaking...
from the friction, probably.
Yeah, probably like hot as hell.
Maybe the snow cooled it. They're on ice! Were they not on ice?
They were, but it only... I mean...
I know. It probably was. It was probably
my
warm.
Water in my...
We are back at the Sci-Fi Happy Hour.
Welcome back to the Sci-Fi Happy Hour.
We're going to talk about the women of sci-fi. We're going to continue our discussion and have at it. Women. Because when it comes to women in sci-fi, the beautiful thing is that they're not there as side characters or just backseat to male characters. What you see in all throughout sci-fi is they are the main characters. It is the same. You can name so many movies.
It's not like, even just one or two. It's like, I would say, majority of the franchise. It's an outlet. Like, whereas you might not see them maybe as action heroes all the time, but within the sci-fi realm, they exist just as much in the forefront as a male character, if not more so.
Right. When you think about many of the main sci-fi staples in movie or books, you're looking at, for example, Aliens, you have Ripley.
Absolutely.
Right? Name some other ones that come off the top. You're looking about...
Okay, so I'm thinking Firefly. I'm thinking Zoe Washburn, right? Yep. Zoe is I mean, freaking badass bitch. I mean, let's be real. Buffy, Vampire Slayer. I mean, how could you not think about Buffy? Or other women on that show. I mean, Willow, Faith. I mean, there's so many characters that are so interesting and so strong.
Sarah Connor. Sarah Connor is very strong, too. Let me talk about strength, okay? Because you mentioned that over and over about how they're very strong or they're very...
And I don't necessarily mean just strength in their power, but it's more than just a physical strength. I'm talking about like an emotional strength, a mental strength, the ability to lead others.
Well, I think what makes stories interesting is when you see a hero that isn't so strong, but they go through some adversity. And especially when they have some kind of weakness, when there's some kind of maybe not only a character flaw or some flaw in their constitution, in their makeup, but that flaw can be external. It could be a trusted advisor that's betrayed them. It could be a trusted lover that has gone against them. And so whatever that adversity is, whether it's internal or external, you see that injected into that character's world and how that character overcomes it, male or female. And so I think when it comes to the power of a character, it isn't only strength. And I think that's where you were going with that.
Right. Totally. I thought you were still talking. I was like, it felt like that was not the end of a sentence.
No, it was a handoff.
Absolutely.
Take it from here. Go shop.
No, it's not just strength. I mean, that's a jumping off point for sure. I mean, we're talking about their intelligence in terms of the cunning.
Like Ripley, talking about Ripley, and we see that she was not a Marine.
No,
she's a scientist. And so, was she a scientist? No, I'm having drawn a blank here. She was originally it was a mining colony. She might be a scientist. No, I'm just pulling out of thin air. It was that whole ship that went off.
Mm-hmm.
And it was on the Dorumu or the Doro.
Nostromo.
Nostromo, that's it. And I think she was a scientist.
We're going to go with that.
Yeah. Anyway, she ended up being the bad bitch that killed the aliens. She had the weapon from the Marines. She was torching them. She's the only one that actually executed quarantine measures when everyone else is like, yeah, bring that sick bastard on our ship, we're going to work on him in our medical bay. She's like, no, don't do it. Don't open the door. No one's coming on this ship. But it was Ash that overruled that and opened the door anyway. But she was the only one with sense, even in Aliens with the Marines. Here are these dudes that are trained killers, and nobody's listening to the one that actually single-handedly killed an alien. No one's listening to her. They're going to go in there and do that.
No, that's true.
You see all this weakness in Ripley. Weakness, she wasn't equipped for that. She wasn't trained for that. There was no way she could have foreseen how things were going to play out in either Alien or Aliens. Those are the ones that I'm really talking about mainly. And yet she overcame and adapted. And in that, we see that hero. And that's the beauty of it. When we're talking about strong women in sci-fi or commendable women or women we're going to look up to and see as heroes, they saved the day. That's, I think, what makes them. Not just that they're strong and tough.
Oh, no, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with whether they're warrior women or not, which that's fun, too. That's been done before. We see that with Wonder Woman. We see that with, you mentioned Zoe.
Well, I think like...
Firefly.
I think the best type of hero is a relatable one. And to be at the level of the every woman. I mean, that plays out in a huge way for the payoff of being the one who saves the day, the one who figures it out, the one who, you know, is the protector.
Right.
Absolutely. I think of, you know, Firefly is a great example. Joss Whedon in general, pretty much whatever he does is female protagonist focused, and strength in character, as well as intelligence, as well as power. But in Firefly, not just Zoe, but I mean, River. River is a very flawed character, very afflicted and damaged from all the experiments that were done on her. But yet she, as we see in Serenity, she kind of really comes into her own and really understands her own internal strength.
That was the beauty of Serenity. Because you didn't see that in Firefly. You didn't see any growth from River. Yeah. River was probably the most flat character in all of that. Everyone else had a growth arc. Or some road they were traveling where River wasn't. But in Serenity, that was a good treatment of her at the end. She said, I'm better. I feel better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it was real. So that was pretty cool. But I want to talk about another character that I thought about when I was introducing adversity, and that's in the movie Gravity. You see Dr. Ryan Stone?
Okay.
That movie was awesome. Yes. I loved that movie. And what you saw in all of her the adventures, I'm going to call them adventures, when she's going through and trying to overcome what's going to happen is she's going to die in space, right? But she is in her life in a bubble, right? And you saw that with, what was it, Kowalski, the George Clooney's character. He's talking to her, and I think it was Kowalski, but he's talking to her, and when she imagined that with the vodka bottle. Right. Did you see it?
Yes, I saw
it. Okay. And
IMAX 3D, because I wanted that whole experience.
Yeah, that movie's awesome. I love it. He identified and said, you're still there about your kid dying. And he says, I get it. I know. The kid died. It can't get worse than that. But he was telling her to move on. Well, she was telling herself that. She was figuring it out. But she's in a bubble, and out there in space, the only thing protecting her was those ships. She was in the Soyuz, and she was in the ice, the space station, and she's only a little suit protecting her, but in her life internally, that was her struggle, is she was holding on to the death of her child.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why she was escaping to space, because she couldn't deal with life. And that was identified in the movie, but then here it was, her survival and fight to get back to Earth was the same of her own survival to break out of that bubble. Interestingly enough, which probably played into playing that character for Sandra Bullock, when she started doing that movie, she had just divorced. I mean, the ink was drying on her divorce papers, and she started shooting. And on the stage, most of that movie, just like Phone Booth, just like being on the island, Tom Hanks being on that island, a lot of those were the characters are just by themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe one or two people with them.
There's like no dialogue.
There's no dialogue. She's on there by herself. Like you think of it being on a green screen with all these cables pulling her in different directions so they can simulate how she's flying around spaceless. There's no co-actors. There's no one to give you a soundboard off of and to react off of. You're just doing it. Fresh out of a divorce, playing on a lonely set, playing as a lonely doctor that's alone in space. You see how layered that is?
She had so much to pull from.
That is just... She felt alone from her divorce, and she felt alone on stage playing as a doctor that had to be alone. Alone in space. Trying to get back to people, get back to life. And it was her breaking out of her... It was amazing, and it all played out on screen. We were watching that. It was magic. It was pure magic. And that is... That what we're talking about here is women in sci-fi. When you see that, you don't see biceps and strong women and hard asses and girls that are tough and mean. You see the real metal in them coming out through their struggles. And I love it. I love it. Especially in sci-fi, because you see that shit in drama.
That's true.
Or in maybe thrillers. But when you're looking at sci-fi, I just love that whole treatment. When you see strong, and I use that word strong to mean like that, strong, overcoming adversity, the drama of that. And it can be in sci-fi where we're talking about space travel and time warps and dimensions and shit. So it's good fun. It's good fun. And all of that's pulling from different types of historical figures.
Right.
I mean, you can look at Bible, Greek mythology, feudal Japan. You can look at different types of eras, the invasion of, the Greek Wars, the English fighting, the Romans, and Vikings. You can see, you can pull from history all these historical figures, women, and we're borrowing from them and putting them into our sci-fi. And it's amazing. You think about Lagertha from Viking legend.
Okay.
And she's played prominently in the Vikings, the History Channel, the TV
show. Okay, right.
That is amazing. The character of Lagertha was actually fell victim to an invading king that killed her king. And I think history goes where she was taken, and what that king did that conquered their king is he took all the family and put him in a brothel.
Ugh.
So now she's a slave prostitute. And so Ragnar comes and rescues that whole scene. And she took arms, disguised herself as a man, and fought as at Ragnar's side to overthrow that, I think it was a Norway king. And the legend goes that she's fighting in an uprise to overcome this, right? Here's the adversity. And in battle, what happens is most women were putting their hair up in a bun, I guess, to tie it up, to out of the way, so this, there's no impediment. But Lagertha doesn't. She's got these beautiful golden locks flowing through the battlefield as she's waving her sword around, killing men, right? And what happens is everyone knows the woman that's on the battlefield slaying people. And that's Lagertha.
That's awesome.
And I think that's the beauty of it, is there's no trade-off, okay? You don't have to be less feminine to be a hero or tough in battle or heroic or to overcome adversity. You don't have to make a conversion like, well, I'm a female and I'm beautiful and I'm all feminine. Yet if I'm going to kick ass, I have to take on manly traits. I have to be tough. I have to not cry. I have to be mean and cold and distant. No. Here is this Lagertha being every bit of woman, and I say that figuratively, with the beautiful golden hair flowing through, and she's not disguising that she's a woman. She's a woman out there in battle kicking ass. And you see that in Wonder Woman. In Wonder Woman, she doesn't put on pants.
No.
She doesn't wear combat boots. She is every bit 100% sexy on screen, yet she's not trying to become a man to kick ass in a man's world. She's doing it as a woman.
Which, and the coolest thing about it as well, is she was the only one in that entire civilization who was a child.
Mm.
And so she got That's to have true. All these female role models growing up, especially the character of Antiope.
Yeah.
Played by Robin Wright, which I thought she blew out of the park for me.
Buttercup. From Buttercup to Warrior.
Yeah, seriously. She... Her scenes with like the bow and arrow and jumping on the end of like a shield and like his back. I don't know. She was so athletic and her just the strength oozing off of her, and how much she was a confident person too. Like you can tell how much of an impact that she made on Diana.
Yeah.
And made her into the Wonder Woman that she is. One thing I also really loved about the movie, I have to touch back on the movie, is they never actually say Wonder Woman. Never once do they refer to her as such.
Interesting.
Which I think is great, because I don't think you need to. I think it diminishes her if you give her that name.
That is interesting, yeah.
Like, I feel like we'll probably see sometime in this new movie, Justice League, they will reference her. Maybe it'll be something that... that Lex Luthor has called her, because he had all those files on all of them. Yeah. So maybe it's Lex Luthor who coins the name Wonder Woman and that catches on. Or maybe it's kind of like in Spider-Man movies, how the news has to give a name to her, this person who saved the day.
Yeah.
And they call her Wonder Woman.
Yeah. It's interesting, though, Lex had that file, or Batman was looking at it, too. And it had the icons for each of them, it had the WW.
I know. But I think that's part of that is because...
Someone already attributed the Wonder Woman...
Either that or on her armor, to a certain extent, there are the WW. Like it's,
yeah, how do you account for that then?
Yeah, so
Because then you'd have to say that back on Themyscira, there was.
I thought that they would explain rank. That the W, kind of like in Man of Steel, that the Superman, S was not an S. The S stood for hope.
Yeah.
I thought that the W might represent something within the Themyscira culture, but they didn't mention anything, so who knows.
How are we going to overcome that?
I feel like they probably don't want anybody thinking about it.
Well, Aquaman shows up. Man, my name is Aquaman. Back where I come from, I'm Aquaman.
I'm kind of like the King of Atlantis, but people usually just call me Aquaman.
Yeah. What's your name?
Like, really, would people in Atlantis call you Aquaman? Probably not, because... I know. Everyone is an Aquaman.
It's like we call you Earthling. And then you get abducted and you're like, oh, or
people call me Earthman.
I like that trailer where Aquaman comes out and he goes, man with a bat suit. I dig it. Yeah. Or what does he say? I butchered that.
No, I think that's pretty close. He's like, I like what you,
man with the bat. I dig it. Just before someone asked Batman, so I see you're playing well with others. Aquaman comes out. Man with a bat suit. I dig it. He turns back to him. It's not going to be for long.
I like when Flash is like, what is your superpower? Oh, anyway? Yeah. He's like, I'm rich.
What's your superpower? I'm rich.
I love that. Oh, my gosh. So we talked about Lagertha. That's, I mean, talk about an impressive character from historical times that absolutely has had such an impact on Wonder Woman and other stories as well.
Yeah.
You know, I think that there are some movies, some stories that do it really well. There are some that really don't do it well in terms of establishing a very strong female presence. Mm. One of the movies that comes to mind is Ghostbusters.
The good one or the bad one?
Well, there's only one with the all-female cast, and that one left a lot to be desired.
Why? I mean, I agree with you. That movie was terrible. But why? Why do you say it's terrible?
Well...
The Shoff screens it.
The reason why I don't think it was a successful movie is in part because it tried to do too much to be derivative of Ghostbusters.
Definitely.
It didn't do enough to set itself apart to become something new. There were too many instances where they were just trying to basically tell the same story, but tell it in a slightly new way. And rather than...
Just dress it up with women.
Yeah. Why couldn't it have been a direct sequel of those movies that now in modern times we have a new franchise of Ghostbusters that are female?
That would make so much sense. This is the second generation of Ghostbusters. The old dudes are gone, and now they've been, the new team is all females, and this is their adventures
they
from
the
here
new
going
recruits.
Forward. Yeah,
like that would have been more interesting.
That would have been way more interesting.
And they could have had new adventures and not retread over the same stuff, especially in the final scene, the end credits, they reference Gozer. It's like, give me a fucking break.
Jeez.
We don't need it. And I really hope that if they do ever make a sequel, which is unlikely because they spent so much money on that budget and they didn't make enough back, that if they ever make a sequel, I hope they do not go down that road and just make another derivative sequel based on a previous Ghostbusters movie. So, but when the movie, the best part about the movie is the special effects, that's a problem. So they had great comedic actresses.
Oh, yeah.
But
I agree.
I don't even necessarily feel like it was written very funny.
It was a shitty movie.
Like, they're very funny people, but it made me wonder, how funny are they if they couldn't make this funny? Like, I don't know.
Was it the bad writing?
I think it was bad writing.
Bad directorial?
Paul Feige, or Feige, or how you pronounce his last name. You know, Dan Aykroyd was recently interviewed.
Oh, yeah.
And he said that the movie sucked because of Paul, because of the director. Yeah. That the reason why there won't be a sequel is because he sucked so bad. So I don't know how I feel. Like, here's the funny thing about movies is if a movie's great, you think it's because of the actors and actresses.
Of course they get the credit.
If the movie's bad, you immediately think it's because of the director. Why do we do that? Like, why couldn't it have been maybe these actors just were miscast? Or maybe it was the story itself.
It has to be the story itself. You've got to do a process of elimination. If you changed out the talent, they're going to act out the same lines and the same plot, the same a different way.
Yeah. Like the best part about that movie was Chris Hemsworth, which is really unfortunate. Like in a movie featuring four strong females, the one strong male is the standout role. Like that's kind of it totally backfired on him. So, and I love Kristen Wiig. I think she's hilarious.
Yeah.
Leslie Jones is really funny normally. This is how I talk. And then we got Melissa McCarthy. She was great. Kate McKinnon was probably a standout. She's probably the best of the four, but it just didn't work. Just didn't work. It's really unfortunate.
It is.
So bad stories, bad direction. I think ultimately
it wasn't a good story. It wasn't a good story because we've seen it before.
Yeah. And Wonder Woman is the first time we've ever seen it in a feature film of her in the movies, like on her own in a solo adventure.
Yeah.
That's so cool. I mean, the character's been around for 70 plus years. This is the first time we've ever seen a movie.
Yeah.
Featuring her. I'm
trying to think of what other movies that were that also bad.
Didn't do it well.
Yeah. And if anything, we might attribute why were these women, not, and I don't mean these particular women, I'm saying why were women cast into a Ghostbusters rerun? And what do you think that reason might be? Why the effort?
Yeah. Well,
why the effort? Why not just cast three dudes?
You want to believe it or not, it was supposed to be. That was a change they did during the production. I want to know who like made that decision or who presented it saying, "No, we can't do more guys."
Cuz it has to be women.
They wanted to get like Seth Rogen and that whole group.
Yeah.
James Franco, which would probably have been fucking hilarious.
But see, now look at that bias. And I'm not picking on you. I'm saying you represent right there. That reaction represents probably the majority. Immediately, it's like those three, four funny girls sucked. But if it had been Seth Rogen, James Franco, Paul Rudd, Jonah Hill, it would have been hilarious. Yeah, but
let me explain myself.
No, you have to defend yourself. I think most people feel that way. But
the reason why they would feel that way is because they've already proven themselves as an ensemble unit to be great like that. Whereas these four people, beyond maybe one SNL skit every once in a while, they would have never shared the stage together. They would have never demonstrated chemistry, which they did not have.
No, I contend that that's not it. That's not the reason the movie sucked. And I think what you said was the reason that four dudes playing Ghostbusters rerun is because those dudes are funny. We got these four girls, they're funny, but they do a Ghostbusters rerun and it's not funny because they hadn't acted together before.
That you don't buy it.
That's what you said.
Well, that's what I mean.
Okay. No, I don't buy that at all. I think that the reason the movie sucked has nothing to do with the sex of the actors or their chemistry or harmony. I think the reason the movie sucked is because it's a Ghostbusters rerun, independent of the sex of the actors.
Well, that's part of it.
That's my belief.
That's part of it. You can't you can't say it's one thing that caused a movie to fail. It's a conglomerate of issues, and one of the issues is the story, choosing to basically redo a story that already existed versus starting something new. But at the same time, like, they chose characters, these four women who could have been, when they first announced those four people, I thought to myself, this is awesome. They are so funny people. Like, all four of them individually, I love all of their stuff. Together, they just weren't funny together. Whereas a group of Seth Rogen, Paul Rudd,
Jason Segel.
Yeah, Jason Segel. Who's the bigger dude?
Jonah Hill.
Yeah, Jonah Hill. Thank you. it would have been nonstop last. We've already seen it. This is the End is a really super funny movie.
Yeah, it's funny.
All the stuff that they've done together, but that's just part of it too. There's so many factors playing into it, and I don't think we needed another Ghostbusters movie. It wasn't a movie screaming to be remade, and that's also another problem. We don't need to reboot everything. The successful stuff from the 80s. We don't need to bring it all back. Why can't we make new things that are interesting?
Okay, you remember Baywatch?
Yeah.
They're going to do Baywatch?
They already did.
Oh, it already came out?
Yeah, it came out.
Was it funny?
I didn't see it. I wanted to.
The trailer looks funny.
It does look pretty funny.
The trailer looks hilarious.
I feel like we're probably getting all the jokes in the trailer.
Yeah.
Like that everything else is just like the scenes of them
watching. I can't think of one remake from the 80s or even the 70s. That has been any good. And I'm talking remake. like not a continuation. For example, Total Recall sucked.
Yeah,
RoboCop true. Sucked. Footloose sucked. I just drew a blank.
I actually like
21 Footloose. Jump Street. No, that was pretty funny. That was funny. 21 Jump Street was funny. So I got to take that back. Yeah, that was.
That was pretty funny.
That was even.
I never saw 22 Jump Street. I wanted to see that.
22 Jump Street was funny. Those are. I don't know. I just got thrilled.
My name's Jeff.
The laughs was funny. This guy looks like he came from the Mumford and Sons.
Oh man!
No, all those reboots suck. They're no good.
Yeah.
So Ghostbusters wasn't going to be any different, despite having an all-male cast that have successfully worked together. I counter you. I draw the battle lines. I disagree.
I guess we'll never really
fervently.
Know.
I'm here for women power.
As am I.
Nope. You're already on the other side. No. You already cast yourself.
You put me there.
No.
I didn't put myself
you,
there.
You totally did it. Now you're personal Wonder Woman. She's going to hear this and you're done for.
Gal, if you're listening.
Wait, what? She's your personal Wonder Woman?
My gal. My gal.
Okay. That's pretty good.
My gal, that's if pretty you're listening.
Good. Well, you're going to find a lot more fun laughs like this on QuinnMitchell.com.
Absolutely. You know what? We got articles there. We've got blog posts from both of us.
Yep.
From time to time, you'll see some Shoff screens it.
Definitely.
I'm going to definitely have one up for Wonder Woman. So the glimpse you got today, you'll get in a much greater detail on our website.
Yeah.
You know, as Mark Twain once said, too much of anything is bad, but too much good whiskey is never enough.
And if you get a chance, try out the High West Whiskey Campfire from the High West Distillery in Utah.
Yes, thank
you. And let us know what you think. Give us some feedback and use our rating system if you can. Let us know what rebel character you think it is.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, McKay, for the suggestion. We really, really appreciate it. Thank you, everyone, for your support.
We'll see you next week.
We'll see you next week back in the lab for more whiskey and more sci-fi.
Take care.
Have a good night.
Have fun.